One of the things that I kind of increasingly find myself frustrated by, particularly as I grow older, is hearing the kind of the stories that I grew up with, that as I explore and discover things a bit more, I realize that some of those stories are just really inadequate about the descriptions of things from the past. You know, stories of saints, and when you read a little bit more around their life, you realize there's so much more to them. There's so much more complexity, so much more texture, so much more depth to their realities. And the story of Solomon, I find, is like one of those stories. When I was a kid, about the only thing that I knew about King Solomon was that he was wise, that he was indeed proclaimed to be the wisest person who had ever lived. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. But when you actually read 1 Kings, where the story of Solomon is told, there's actually only one example that is given to provide us with any kind of detail about that, which is just directly after the story that we hear tonight, 1 Kings 3, at the end of that chapter. And of course, it's a wonderful story of these two prostitutes who come, and during the night, one of their babies has died, and the other mother then takes the dead baby, puts it with the other mother, takes the living baby and puts it with herself. And then the mother wakes up in the morning, her baby is dead, and she's like, hang on, that's not even my baby. And so they go to King Solomon and ask the question, and he says, okay, well, very clearly, we'll just chop the baby in half and give half the baby to each woman. And the mother whose child it actually is says, no, give the child to the other woman. And King Solomon is then able to discern and say, no, well, clearly the one that is prepared to, that wants the baby to live is the real mother of this child. But it's the only example, the only story that we're told about King Solomon's wisdom. They keep repeating this fact that, yes, he was very wise and very shrewd. But when you read around, even around the passage tonight, like the first five verses of 1 Kings 3, we're told, where is Solomon? He's not in Jerusalem, the city that his father David had established as the new capital city. It's the place where the Ark of the Covenant, the very sign of God's presence, where the mercy seat was, where you could come to be in the presence of God. Now, he was up at Gibeon, and he was offering a sacrifice there. And it seems most likely because he's trying to woo one of the princesses of Egypt at this point, and he's trying to build his own house. He's not actually even begun the project that was to be his great legacy, which was to build a temple. No, he's just continuing to foster his own nest, to do things about his own love life. And then as we go on, we begin to see, for someone who has asked for wisdom, not really sure whether that's in fact the case. Now, for the gentlemen here who have spent considerable time, no doubt, in wooing your one wife, you know, how much time did it take to convince her that you were worth pursuing? How much time did it take you to be on your very best behavior in order to demonstrate that you were worthy to be the husband to this woman? And 1 Kings 11 tells us that Solomon, of all Solomon's wives, there were 700 who were princesses. So imagine if your wife was a princess, how much more time would it take to try and woo her? And of his wives, there are 700 who were princesses. So we don't even know how many wives he had in total. And then he had another 300 concubines on the side. So presumably, Solomon, in addition to building personal wealth, to building his own house, to making alliances with pagan nations, for building up the war machine and establishing Israel as this great political empire. For all of that time, how much time did he actually spend being faithful to God, being true to the Lord? And yet, the Lord still seems to be quite happy to appear to Solomon in a dream here at Gibeon. He doesn't wait for Solomon to go back to Jerusalem. He doesn't wait for Solomon to begin to do that project of building the temple, to actually be faithful and true to his word. The Lord meets Solomon where he's at. He seems to be prepared to accept that Solomon is offering sacrifices in the wrong place. He's trying to woo the wrong kind of women. His heart eventually will be terribly divided by the presence of all these women who are worshipping other gods and bring their own practices and customs to Israel that provide a continual distraction for Solomon. I think it's fascinating that the Lord still pours out so much blessing and so much grace upon Solomon. How much more will God do for us? How much more if we are open to his will? How much more if we give and dedicate ourselves? You know, our second reading, as we come to the kind of the climax of this magnificent eighth chapter of Paul's letter to the Romans. You know, this cacophony as Paul is in all of his excitement, just as he continues just to repeat the wonders of what God is doing and the gift of his grace. For all those who have been called, he will justify. And for those he will justify, he will call us into the very life of God. And in fact, Paul tells us that he will share his glory with us. Now, will any of us ever be worthy of the glory of God? No. And that word glory in the Hebrew is the word kavod. It signifies something of just this immense weight and substance. This glory is not something you can move and shake about. It's this place, this thing that we can find our sure hope and foundation in. And that the Lord says, I will share that with you. I will call you into that. I will allow you to experience this life. At the end of our first reading today, as the Lord pours out this abundance upon Solomon, he calls him back again. He says, now there is more something that you have to do. You have to be faithful to my word. You have to keep my covenants. That's where life is found. That's where we discover this goodness that can only shape us and mold us. No matter where we find ourselves at the beginning, no matter what our situation is, and no matter how often our hearts become distracted by all the things around us, if only we can keep coming back to this treasure, if only we can keep coming back to that thing that defines us, that place where we can find our life, then God will indeed share his glory with us. God will indeed bring out these treasures, old and new, for us to rejoice and celebrate in. But we need to know what that's like. We need to know who God is and what he's inviting us into. So once we find that life, once we make that decision to walk in the way of the Lord, to listen to him, to hear his commandments, to be instructed by God, then everything else lies before us. God will pour himself out. God delights to give to us. God is never stingy. There is such generosity. There's always more. Always more for God to love in us, and always more love for us to receive. So let's allow the Lord to continue to invite us into that freedom, into that life. And let's indeed pray that we will have the wisdom to receive and understand that word